Good afternoon, everybody. I have the formidable task of talking about the NRCS Nutrient Management 590 Conservation Practice Standard. When we talk about nutrient management planning, we're talking about balancing crop production with environmental quality. Some of the driving forces here, we've heard a lot of the presentations, whether it was Susie, Dave Hansen just now, cleaner lakes, cleaner rivers, cleaner streams, cleaner groundwater. We haven't talked a lot about groundwater resources here today, but also an important activity. Obviously, we want to sustain the livestock industry. We want to sustain agricultural production as a whole. We want to look at voluntary adoption versus regulatory compliance. The focus is nitrogen, and in some cases, it's also phosphorus. When we look at the arena of nutrient management planning, there's a lot of opportunity to be working out there on the land. From a cropland perspective, some 400 million acres available for nutrient management planning. If we include the grazing land, another 525 million acres. From a forest land standpoint, 400 million more acres. There's over 257,000 animal feeding operations out there that are going to need some type of a plan, or hopefully will have some type of a plan on them. This map just shows every one of these dots is 20 farms. It shows the potential need for CNMPs, and we can see how over time our animal agriculture has concentrated itself in various parts of the country, posing all sorts of unique situations and circumstances. This illustrates that a little bit more. It looks at the excess manure phosphorus, assuming no export of manure from the farm. And you can see that the darker the picture gets, the bleaker the story becomes in that area as far as being able to adequately accommodate the manure and the phosphorus on a sustainable level over the long haul. My job today is to talk about the 590 in and of itself as we try to bring some of the issues, items, discussion topics that we've heard today into it. Harold said adaptive management is based on local data and the scientific / practical knowledge. Keep in mind that what we have here is the 590 Conservation Practice Standard on a national level. Rick Fasching said this last night. I mean, we're setting the criteria for 590 at the national level. Every state then will take this and be able to adapt it to their local conditions, their local needs. They can't set the bar lower, they can set the bar higher. So keep that in mind as I go through this. I'm going to step through what we call the 590 and the parts that we have, and I'll dissect some of this in terms of how it conflicts with the notion or concept of adaptive management. By definition, it's managing the application amount, source, timing, and placement of plant nutrients and soil amendments. The purpose for the 590 would be to budget and supply nutrients for plant production, to properly utilize manure or organic byproducts as a plant nutrient source, to minimize agricultural non-point source pollution of surface and groundwater resources, also to protect air quality by reducing odors, sulfur, and nitrogen emissions and the formation of atmospheric particulates, and lastly, to maintain or improve physical, chemical, and biological condition of the soil. That's the purpose, the background behind the 590. Where does this practice apply? To all lands where plant nutrients and soil amendments are applied. We have additional sections in the 590 standard. We have some criteria. We have considerations as you're developing and conducting nutrient management planning. We have plans and specifications, operation and maintenance, and then a reference section. That's how the standard is laid out. All of our conservation practice standards follow that format. Talk about bureaucracy, Dave. The ones that are asterisked, the criteria, the plans and specifications, operation and maintenance, are ones that I'm going to highlight today. When we look at the criteria, it addresses the soil and tissue sampling and lab analysis from a certification standpoint, so we know we're getting a reputable lab that will analyze the sample. Manure sampling and lab analysis, the same. We look at risk assessment as part of the criteria, the nutrient application rates, the amount, the form, the source. We look at timing of the nutrient application. We look at placement, the nutrient application methods, and also additional criteria to improve the physical, chemical, and biological condition of the soil. Mentioned the risk assessment tools. We've all seen and heard of the leaching index. That's going back some 20, 25 years. Phosphorus index. Jerry is not here right now. The father of the phosphorus index blessed us earlier with his presence. Not here anymore, though. Obviously, one of the powerful tools that we have to use in the nutrient management planning arena. We also have a nitrogen index, an N index. Jorge has been involved in that quite a bit. They were using it in Colorado. Other states are working more and more toward a nitrogen index as well. From a plans and specification standpoint for the 590, there are certain components that each nutrient management plan has to have. And a nutrient management plan has to have an aerial site photo and a soils map, indication of the location of any sensitive areas or resources, current and or planned crop rotation for that operation or the fields in the nutrient management plan, results of soil, water, manure, and tissue analysis, the realistic yield goals, and a complete nutrient budget for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Listing and quantification of all of the nutrient sources that are being utilized on that operation. Field-specific recommended nutrient application rates, the timing, the form, and the method of application and or incorporation. And then some guidance for the implementation, operation, maintenance, and record keeping for that plan. When we talk about operation and maintenance, we're looking at periodic review of the nutrient management plan itself, update of that plan, if there's a change in animal numbers, a change in feed management, or any crop acreage changes. Inspection or maintenance of fertilizer and or manure storage facilities, calibration of equipment, obviously very important, part of the O&M activities. And then documentation of the actual rates for the nutrients that were applied and any reasons why they would differ from the planned rates. That's part of what we have written in 590. And then maintaining records to document the implementation. So that steps us through the dry part of what 590 is and how we step our way through that. Some of the common goals for adaptive nutrient management or adaptive management in the 590 is this nutrient efficiency, which we've talked a lot about today already. Natural resource protection, the long-term sustainability, and Susie also mentioned the economics of the profitability also has to be a part of that. Here's where we look at some of the differences, though. In the 590 standard, we can lay this out very well. You know, we think we're fairly good at being able to detail this, right, Norm? But we deal with the certainty. We can lay this out. Harold talked about cookbook and prescription, and we can, you know, we can do this. But in adaptive management, we're dealing more with the uncertainty. So we've got a dichotomy there. The 590 deals with the known facts of the nutrient management planning, whereas in the adaptive management, we're looking more at the art and the science of the farming activity. In the 590, we deal with the strategic or longer-term planning. We develop a five-year nutrient management plan, CNMP. It is a, I don't want to call it a book exercise, but I mean, we're planning 3 to 5 years into the future, and we know that that's at any one point isn't going to be correct or accurate at all anymore. In the 590, we need to deal more with the short-term or the tactical planning on a day-to-day basis. And we can do that with the adaptive management. As Tracy was saying, we go back, look at the stock nitrate test, and then we can adapt, you know, not in season in that case, but for next year, we can make changes. The hard part is going to be, how do we do that? You know, what will it take for us to be able to adequately describe that in our national 590 standard? Again, some of the concepts I just mentioned, the work that Tracy is doing, we're constantly looking through our CIG activity at opportunities to work with entities to provide us more information related to some of the adaptive management opportunities. We reach the farmers, the consultants, researchers. We want to collect that information, plan, evaluate, and adjust. We want to build in this flexibility, develop the criteria for adaptive nutrient management. We want it to be accepted by the land-grant universities. They are our partners out there. Those are the folks that we rely on. We have the fertilizer recommendations in every state, working with land-grant universities. They're our backbone. That's the basis for our nutrient management plan. We need to be working with those people and continue to work with those people. That's not to say that there's not an opportunity for other people to become involved. We need to be working with those individuals that are working locally, whether that's a private individual, a company, whether it's a fertilizer company or not. Those are the people that, you know, we need to bring everybody to the table and bring everybody together on this. We'll be able to then adjust from those land-grant university recommendations, and then obviously, with the emphasis on CNMPs and CAFOs now, we need to be cognizant and stay in line with the policies that we have currently. Tracy, I like this too. I don't know if Tom's got a problem with it, but you know, plan, implement, evaluate, adjust, and then we start to cycle over again. It continues. It's continuous. So we're looking at adapting the timing, the rate, the source, and the method of application to meet the local conditions, looking at adapting land-grant university nutrient recommendations to be more site-specific, and we're working with that participatory activity to get people involved, everybody at the table. That's what we need to do. We're going to fine-tune these things, whether it's manure application, cover crops, no-till, any of the unique rotations. There was a little discussion today about some of those. We're going to update not only our 590, but our nutrient management policy. Subsequent to that, as I indicated, each state needs to update its state 590 standard. We're working on an NRCS tech note or two. We'll have some collaborative fact sheets, and we're hoping to be able to have some type of a more precise or involved nutrient management campaign in the future. As far as the tech note is concerned, we're hoping we'll have two of these that's still up for discussion, I guess, Tracy. The first one will look at adaptive management for nitrogen, some of the in-season tools, some of the post-season tools, and then how do we make this work? This is a how-to tool that we can put in people's hands, whether that's a farmer, whether that's somebody that's newly trying to get involved in this activity, you know, just trying to spread the wealth of information here. A second tech note would talk more about the participatory learning, this notion of leading from behind, getting those growers involved, making them be in the forefront, talking to one another over the fence post. You hear this time and time again, I'll try this, but you know, if so-and-so's done it, well, then maybe it'll work on my operation too. And then bring in some of the scientific benefits. We do have programs available. Susie, you mentioned them briefly. We're looking at the EQIP activity, CSP, as far as financial assistance goes to see what we can bring to the table. As far as adaptive management goes, we continue to have technical assistance dollars. And one of the roles that I play, I'm also looking at nutrient management planning software to see how we can bring some of this adaptive management to bear in the software as well. We've already covered most of that. Just briefly, there are Obviously, surveys galore out there, and this was given to me, or I saw this presentation at our first meeting, and then I pulled a couple of these slides in here as far as farmers and changing their behavior as far as it goes relates to nutrient management. This is part of the BMP challenge. 54% of the farmers have reduced fertilizer over 5 years, 18% of them by 15% or more. 86% of the farmers credit N from soybeans. These days, 75% credit the nutrients in the manure. 33% use variable rate. That's probably higher if they don't really know that they're doing that, right, Tracy? 12% use in-season testing, whether it's a PSNT or other tools that were talked about today. And this is interesting. 46% want to see proof before changing practices. So, I mean, we've got to listen to that. Now, here's a really interesting one. 80% would be interested in reducing fertilizer rates if the income were guaranteed. Okay, there's another take-home point for us. We need to be looking at that to know that maybe there's something we can do to guarantee at least some portion of that income if we're trying to change mindsets as far as nutrient management goes.